Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, that proposed ICE detention facility in Orange County continues to draw bipartisan opposition and raise concerns across the Mid-Hudson Valley. Today, we'll look at what it could mean for immigrant families and the region with Reverend Richard Witt of Rural and Migrant Ministry coming up. Governor Hochul is rolling out $260 billion budget today with new funding for childcare, but no new taxes. We'll get more details from the New York Public News Network, as well as more reactions from lawmakers and political insiders after her State of the State. Star that once lit up Pike County could be making a comeback, and in Wayne County, residents are helping design a new playground from the ground up. Plus, how middle school students in Sullivan County are turning lessons about healthy food into original music. After the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. President Trump continues to demand control of Greenland. He's threatened to impose initial tariffs of 10% on 8 European nations and then boost these if the countries don't back his demand. Speaking at the World Economic Forum in Switzerland today, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen says Greenland's sovereignty and integrity are non-negotiable. She says Trump's tariff threats are a mistake.
The European Union and the United States have agreed to a trade deal last July. And in politics, as in business, a deal is a deal. And when friends shake hands, it must mean something.
The European Commission president is calling for a new form of European independence. President Trump is headed for Switzerland later today. Trump released social media messages overnight from France's and NATO's leaders. In one of the messages, French President Emmanuel Macron said simply, "I do not understand what you are doing on Greenland." Stocks opened sharply lower this morning as Trump threatens a renewed trade war with Europe. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average tumbled 720 points in early trading.
President Trump has threatened to impose an escalating series of tariffs on goods from 8 NATO countries in Europe unless those countries bow to his demands to take over Greenland. The move could prompt retaliatory tariffs on U.S. exports, as well as other moves under Europe's so-called trade bazooka, a weapon designed to counter economic coercion. The threats and counter-threats come as Trump is preparing to travel to an international economic meeting in Davos, Switzerland. In Davos, Trump is expected to discuss housing affordability. Mortgage rates have been coming down, but that could change. The trade dust-up has sent Treasury yields, which often drive mortgage rates, higher. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
President Trump continues to put new restrictions on legal immigration to the United States. His pause on processing visas from dozens of countries takes effect tomorrow. NPR's Franco Ordonez has more.
The Trump administration is suspending immigrant visas for people from 75 countries, including Colombia, Iran, Russia, and Somalia. The move is part of the administration's efforts to block people who would potentially require public assistance while living in the U.S. Trump has long complained that immigrants are a drain on public resources, even though many studies show immigrants become workers, consumers, and contributors to the U.S. economy. David Beer, director of immigration studies at the Libertarian Cato Institute, estimated that the pause on processing visas will, quote, ban nearly half of all legal immigrants to the U.S., turning away about 315,000 legal immigrants over the next year. Franco Ordonez, NPR News.
On Wall Street, the Dow was down 716 points. This is NPR. President Trump released a proclamation last night honoring slain civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. Yesterday was the holiday recognizing him. Presidents have typically attended services or events commemorating King. Civil rights groups have criticized Trump for failing to do so. There are more questions about the tactics used by ICE agents in Minnesota to detain people. On Sunday, federal agents broke down the door of Scott Tao, a naturalized American citizen living in St. Paul. They forced him outside in snow and sub-freezing temperatures in his underwear. Tao said agents eventually realized he was an American with no criminal history and drove him home. Indiana has won its first national college football title. The undefeated Hoosiers beat Miami 27-21 in the championship game last night in Miami. From member station WFIU, George Hale has more.
Bars and restaurants emptied into the streets in Bloomington, home to Indiana University. Mayor Kerry Thompson joined revelers amassed for blocks around IU's limestone entryway to celebrate the team's win and remarkable turnaround.
But really, what a game. Congrats to our Hoosiers. There were some epic plays.
The spontaneous gathering along Kirkwood Avenue continued to grow for hours after the game as fans poured into the downtown area. Some tore down signs and others climbed onto street lamps and trees to get a glimpse of the massive crowd. For NPR News, I'm George Hale in Bloomington, Indiana.
Again on Wall Street, the Dow is down more than 700 points, or about 1.5%. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Imaginable Futures, envisioning a future where learning sparks opportunity and thriving belongs to everyone. Learn more at imaginablefutures.com. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. We've been telling you about that proposed ICE facility in Chester, New York, in Orange County. It's garnered local and national attention, with lawmakers across party lines pushing back against the proposal. If built, it would be Orange County's second immigration facility. The Orange County Jail currently serves as an ICE detention center. Joining me now on the phone to discuss how this facility could affect immigrant families in the Mid-Hudson Valley and the region as a whole is Rural and Migrant Ministries Executive Director, Reverend Richard Witt. Reverend, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Now, a lot's happened since the Washington Post first reported on this proposed facility in Orange County in December. Since then, the Department of Homeland Security has filed a notice of activity to purchase the warehouse in Chester, and hundreds of residents have shown up to local board meetings to push back against the proposal. What else do we know about the impact this news has had on the region?
I think this news has an impact in so many different directions. One of the largest directions is the impact it's having on immigrant families, and especially their children. They're already living in great fear of separation from their parents, of their children, and having such a facility just adds to that environment of fear. Another direction is just the impact on the quality of life in our community, in our Orange County community, in our community of Chester. When they've built facilities like this in other communities, those communities have adopted the reputation front and center of being a place that warehouses immigrants. And, Batavia, New York, beautiful town, but people don't think of Batavia anymore first, as a beautiful town. They think of it as a repressive detention facility. So that impacts the good reputation of Chester and our community. And finally, economically, the detention, the deportation of immigrant men, women, children has a huge impact on our local economies. And we all then end up suffering with the loss of such vital members of our community.
Orange County Executive Steve Newhouse said on Friday that he would be filing legal action around the proposed facility. Congress member Pat Ryan has also launched a petition to block the facility. What else have you heard from local lawmakers in the Hudson Valley about what this facility would mean for the area?
I'm hearing across the board that local and state lawmakers are against this facility. This is not just about our own community, our own state. It's about what's happening in this country as a whole now, and the importance of people standing up to say, we don't want to be a country or a community that starts first with fear and racism. I've been with Rural Migrant Ministry since 1991. I've been in Orange County since 1991. We have long had immigrant families working on our farms and contributing to our community. And it's only in recent years that this whole tension has flipped on its side here and caused just a great tension that I think is impacting everybody's well-being.
Well, we see these growing immigration raids nationwide, the surge in Minnesota, the killing of Renee Good, a protester, detention arrests exploding in New York County jails even. You mentioned you've been in this position since the 90s. How has this affected the communities you serve, this national influx of raids and just attitude, I suppose, in the nation's psyche, especially among rural families?
I think it's led to an increased distrust of our neighbors, a lack of appreciation and understanding of the contributions folks are making. You know, when I first started, folks were traveling back and forth from Orange County to Texas to Mexico. There were no walls. There was no fear or tension. People came. They contributed to our economy. They went back to their homes. And it's only in these recent years that all of that has been changed. And you can just feel the tension and the anger. Even those that are against, or those that are in support of this facility, when you see their posts on social media or you hear them in the public, it always feels to me like it's such an anger and such a sarcasm and mocking of brothers and sisters and fellow community members. And that can't be healthy for any of us.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to the Reverend Richard Witt, who is Rural and Migrant Ministries Executive Director. We're speaking about the proposed ICE facility in Orange County and also about immigration raids across the country and how it affects families locally. Your nonprofit works directly with young people and families in rural parts of the state. What measures are you hearing from families and others to keep themselves and their families safe?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There are two aspects to this. One is people are just fearful to be out in public, to have their children in public. They're fearful to have their children go to school. Children are fearful to go to school. I mean, it's just a lot of fear, and it's really impacting folks. The other thing is that it's also forcing children to, you know, by and large, who are American citizens, to have to take on extra jobs to curtail their schooling in order to help their family survive. So it's changing and impacting the dreams and hopes of these young people who so want to be a part of American life and so want to contribute to American life.
There's an article in the New York Times this morning about volunteers in Minnesota delivering groceries so immigrants can hide at home. Is there a similar sort of chilling effect happening here in the Hudson Valley?
There is tremendous concern, and throughout New York there are similar situations where people go to grocery stores and see Border Patrol, Homeland Security folk in front of those grocery stores blockading the ability to eat.
And are you seeing an uptick in volunteers wanting to help?
Oh, absolutely. Rural Migrant Ministry had to create a volunteer coordinator position because we've just been inundated with folks that want to volunteer in any which way. We recently had a volunteer donate 50,000 meals that could be delivered to folk. You know, because there was a perfect storm a short while ago with the combination of the raids and their fear, the reduction of SNAP benefits. And then in New York, there were a lot of Jamaican farm workers that were stuck in New York because of the hurricane damage in Jamaica. And so all that just led to a huge struggle around food and hunger.
Governor, our state senator Michelle Hinchey is the latest local public official to oppose the proposed ICE processing center at that warehouse in the town of Chester in Orange County. Hinchey's call adding to the growing chorus of folks pushing back. What are the next steps local advocates like your nonprofit, Rural and Migrant Ministry, and others can do to block the facility?
Well, I think that the community needs to continually stand up and give voice to their concerns and their hopes of the kind of community that we all want to have and live in. People need to be present. People need to let their legislators know their feelings, because our legislators are, and not just our local legislators, but our state legislators and our federal legislators and the governor all need to know that the overwhelming majority of the people don't want to be living in a community that's based on oppression and fear and economic ruin.
And with all of these efforts by ICE across the country, what is the message you want folks to hear about the impact of these raids, and then also, you know, the way forward in some ways for folks to help and to support families in our region?
Well, as you mentioned, I'm a person of faith, and we in the faith community always start with loving our neighbor, and all our neighbors are our neighbors. We don't choose, you know, who our neighbor is. All are our neighbors, and we are called in the faith community to not only love our neighbor, but to welcome the foreigner in our midst. So I think the more that we can do as individuals to just begin in our own sphere by loving our neighbor, welcoming the stranger in our midst, and speaking out against injustice, then the stronger we all will be as a community that thrives.
I know that there was a press conference and rally scheduled in Orange County on Saturday, but had to be postponed because of weather. Is there a new date yet for that rally?
I know that they are in the final moments of putting together the date and the time and the location, and that shortly there will be an announcement inviting people to stand strong.
That's Reverend Richard Witt from Rural and Migrant Ministries. He's the executive director. There's more information at ruralmigrantministry.org. Reverend Richard Witt, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. And to the listeners, thank you for being thoughtful citizens.
We'll take a break. And up next, reimagining landmarks and parks in Pike and Wayne counties. Stay with us. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, a lot of people take supplements to help their memory or their cognitive ability. On a scale of 0 to 10, how effective are these brain supplements?
I'm really struggling between 0 and 1.
And why doesn't the FDA even know what's in them?
It's truly the Wild West.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Today at 2 on Radio Catskill.
Hi, Ira Flatto here from Science Friday. We view Sci-Fry as a refreshing break from the daily bombardment of political news. You know, there's lots of important and interesting science and technology out there. Whether it's the deep, dark mysteries of the universe or your deep, dark microbiome, it's all right here. So start your weekends with thought-provoking news on Radio Catskill.
Support comes from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills. From inpatient and outpatient care to primary, urgent, and specialty care with Garnet Health doctors in Sullivan County. Exceptional lives here. Learn more at garnethealth.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Across the Upper Delaware region, some residents are stepping forward to shape the future of their public spaces. In Pike County, a grassroots group is pushing to bring back the illuminated star on Milford Knob, removed several years ago amid concerns about religious symbols on public land. And in Wayne County, community members are weighing in on what should replace the playground that once stood in Honesdale's Central Park. Joining us now to talk about both of these community-led efforts is Liam Mayo, news editor for The River Reporter. Liam, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Tim.
You are covering two different but deeply rooted community-oriented efforts. Let's talk about the star on Milford Knob. Walk us through the history of that star there and why it became such a meaningful part of the community's identity.
Yeah. So according to a 2020 report, commemorative displays at the Milford Knob date back to the Civil War. This particular, like, brightly illuminated star dates back to the 1930s. It was maintained by the Milford Lions Club, which lit the star around Christmas, as well as a cross on the same frame around Easter, as well as being lit for certain nationally significant moments. So some kind of display at the Milford Knob has a long history in Milford, and that lasted up until 2017, when the National Park Service, which owns that land, informed the Lions Club that they were no longer permitted to put up the display, concerned about, the potential that it looked like it was endorsing religion. According to some of the people behind this project, they don't see the star as a religious symbol, but it kind of represents community and unity. Our reporter, Stella Tannenbaum, talked to two of the members behind the effort right now, current Milford Mayor Candace Mahala, as well as Fred Weber. Mahala said that the star, was always in Milford when she was a kid, and, returning to Milford, it always symbolized that she'd, like, come home. So she has kind of that personal long connection to it. For Weber, he moved to Milford since the star not being able to be displayed. So he's gotten involved with it as a member of the community now, sort of looking to bring that symbol back. So we have sort of support from both the people who, grew up with the star, who knew it as this hugely significant thing for their community, and for people who are joining the community, wanting to help the community, seeing it as a symbol to sort of further unity and trust in the community.
They've formed a committee, Restore the Star Committee. That's Candace Mahala, current Milford mayor and co-chair of the communication committee for the Restore the Star effort. This committee is circulating letters and trying to build support. What kind of response are they getting so far from supporters and from critics?
Yeah, they say they're getting pretty good support so far. They're receiving community donations through the Greater Pike Community Foundation. Group has over 300 followers on its Facebook page. They're also getting local businesses involved, offering to help support the installation. In terms of the sort of immediate steps they're hoping to take, the eventual goal is to secure a historic site designation, as well as potentially illuminate the display at additional times of the year, like 4th of July or Veterans Day. But right now they're just trying to get permits to sort of start displaying the star during the times of the year where it was historically shown.
And the first step is to get that permit. Other people had gone through trying to get this back again, like a special use permit through the National Park Service. Is it complicated, this permit, or is it just, following through with these steps?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what's involved with the current permitting process. There was an attempt to bring it back in 2020. There was a report commissioned, or the National Park Service commissioned a report trying to designate the star as a historic site, which would mean it didn't require a special use permit. After 3 years of review, that proposal was rejected in 2023 on the basis that there was not enough community support. There would need to be further research and broader community support. And so that's kind of what the group is doing, and they're attempting to build that community support. But they also just kind of see that as, they're saying as well that they think the report kind of undersold the amount of support that the effort or that the star already kind of had in the community.
There's a renewable energy angle here, too, with a way of powering the lights.
Yeah, they're trying to, the hope would be that they're looking to power the lights through solar technology, which would keep the power for the star at the star itself rather than having the power source be in another location and having to like run a big cord up the mountain to transmit the electricity needed to power it.
And moving over to Wayne County, another community-led effort, this time the People's Playground Project, the Central Park Playground. Let's remind folks what happened there. It's now a clean slate, I guess, in the playground. But why did it have to go away? And then what's the future replacement idea?
Yeah. So in Honesdale Central Park, there was playground equipment that needed to be removed or that was removed after a report indicated that the tire mulch used as ground cover for that play equipment was potentially damaging nearby trees. And it was removed sort of without a ton of community involvement or even community notice. So in the aftermath of that, a bunch of community members stepped up and said, hey, since it's gone, let's try and rally the community and let's try and all of us put our heads together so that whatever replaces it really, really reflects what the community needs and what the community wants for this space. So they formed this group, the People's Playground Project. They formalized the ability to work with the borough to gather the information for this. And so far they've been conducted a survey. They've been holding sort of pop-up workshops and with the goal right now of gathering big ideas for what the playground could be before moving on to some considerations of what might actually be possible.
And they say that they've circulated a survey which gathered over 200 responses so far. What is the survey telling folks from the People's Playground Project, at least at this point?
Well, you know, the one standout or a standout so far has been swings. There were not swings present at the former playground, and that is the top most requested aspect of this new playground. A couple of other things that stand out, people were identifying bathrooms, some kind of fence or safety barrier as important, the fence being like something that would go around all or part of the playground to keep little kids and potentially children with developmental disabilities from bolting off and sort of leaving the playground. And participants also were asked sort of what theme they would want for the playground, choosing between a list of options. Top options included generally local nature, the Storebridge Lion, and woodlands. A couple of write-in answers, which, you know, just people writing in their own, were flowery summer wonderland, dragon, and bugs. So a lot of input from members of the community of all ages.
Well, I vote dragon. Also, in the free response portion of the surveys, several respondents expressed some concern about the safety of the new playground equipment, specifically centered around teen residents of Honesdale who might be attracted to the area. What are they saying there?
Yeah, this was one where there was a little more sort of back and forth about sort of how to incorporate teens into the process. Some were concerned about teens as a negative influence on the playground, potentially with vandalism or potentially with, you know, using equipment that was more aimed at younger children. And in one of the workshop sessions where people went over the survey responses, the people who were there as well as the organizers of this effort sort of expressed the hope that if you like actively involve the teens in the process of designing this playground, and if you create spaces for them rather than trying to exclude them entirely from this space, they will see it as their own and they will like act to protect it rather than being a harmful influence on it. So there were also some people calling for cameras to make sure that it wasn't vandalized, but yeah, that's what's with that.
And a couple of folks saying that it should encourage accessibility for the playground, also specific equipment for very small children, including toddlers. You know, what I'm impressed by with both of these community projects is that how organized they are. Both of them have their own websites, peoplesplaygroundproject.com in Honesdale and restorethestar.org for that Milford effort. Was that something that struck you as well in covering these stories?
Well, I think what strikes me about both of these stories is, and I think we've talked about this a couple times before, is the care that people are putting into their public spaces and the how that is paired with sort of the development of civic life. Like, it's easy, I think, to take public spaces for granted, and it's easy to think like, oh, I'm just going to go walk down to the park that someone else has built and designed for me, and I'm just going to have fun there. But, you know, someone needs to do the designing of these spaces, and someone needs to, you know, put up that star. And I think there's a growing spirit, or a, you know, revitalized spirit of people stepping up to say, hey, our communities aren't going to have these nice spaces or these nice sort of unifying items if there aren't people willing to do the work of gathering them and, you know, supporting them. And why shouldn't that person be me? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what stands out to me about both of these, is the community driven spirit behind them.
Yeah. It's good to see, the local civic engagement, all across the area. That's Liam Mayo of the River Reporter. You can read about both these stories and all the news in the region at riverreporter.com. Liam, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the details on Governor Kathy Hochul's proposed $260 billion New York State budget and more reaction from political insiders on their perspective to the governor's proposals. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, this week on Latino USA. We bring you a story that takes you across the ocean and into a journalist's personal memories.
The story of the Marielle boat lift is the central story of my life. There was a before and an after. I was never the same after that.
That's this week on Latino USA. Thursday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
This week on This American Life, Alan cut down two trees in his front yard. And when he did, he made some enemies.
There was this crow sitting in the front lawn. And as soon as the crow was out of my sight, that's when I got this thump on the back of my head.
Crows are vengeful. They hold grudges. Alan tried to make amends. But is that possible with an angry bird? This week.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Governor Kathy Hochul is proposing a $260 billion New York State budget today. It includes new money for child care, but no new taxes. From the New York Public News Network, WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind reports.
Hochul's budget will increase funding for schools and add more than $1 billion for child care vouchers. Blake Washington is the governor's top fiscal aide. He says strong returns on Wall Street and continued consumer spending mean New York can afford to pay for it without raising taxes.
With the amount of revenue coming into the state of New York, thanks to a progressive tax code, there's no need to increase taxes in the current year.
Millionaires in New York City already pay the highest combined tax rate in the country. Progressive groups and Mayor Mamdani say they want to tax the wealthy more, setting up a potential clash with Hochul. The state budget is due March 31st. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
The New York Public News Network team was on the ground at the Egg for Governor Kathy Hochul's State of the State address last week. Chantel Destra and Elise Klein of WMHT and the New York Public News Network spoke with a slew of lawmakers, election officials, and political insiders to get their perspective on the governor's proposals.
We'll find even more ways to deliver for New Yorkers, just as we've done these last 5 years. Because there's one thing I know, so New Yorkers move forward with strength and compassion, side by side. There's no challenge we can't meet, no tyrant we can't beat, no future we can't build. So let's build that future together with enthusiasm, optimism, and with fearlessness. We must be tough. We have to be strong.
Governor Kathy Hochul's State of the State address was centered on addressing affordability and fundamental rights for New Yorkers. In the moments leading up to the speech and right after, Democrats seem to be largely in support of the governor's proposals.
There are issues that are at the top of New Yorkers' mind. Can they afford to stay in their homes? Can they put food on the table? Can they be safe from a government that is trampling on their constitutional rights? I liked what I heard on all of those issues. We, of course, have a lot of details to work through over the next couple of weeks. But I think this is one of the governor's stronger state of the states because she was in tune with what New Yorkers want to hear.
She's always been pragmatic. She's always been realistic. And that's going to continue. And I am very, very proud of the work that she's done on behalf of the people of the state of New York.
One of the biggest moments with the biggest reaction from the crowd during Hochul's State of the State address was a proposal to establish universal child care.
We'll pilot community-wide child care to provide year-round, full-day, affordable care for newborns to three-year-olds.
This proposal was also one of the key points on state lawmakers and leaders' minds after the address. Dr. Damia Harris-Madden, commissioner of the State Office of Children and Family Services, says she literally jumped out of her seat from excitement when the governor highlighted it in her address.
This is a huge win, but it's also a next stepping stone for what has already been historically laid by the governor in terms of the investments in child care.
Some state lawmakers who have long pushed for universal child care are thrilled to see the governor make this a priority this year. State Senator Jabari Brisbord, a Democrat representing parts of Brooklyn and chair of the Senate Children and Families Committee, has been a strong advocate for the issue for many years. The chair says he thinks the proposal is a great first step, but still, he feels there's more to accomplish on this issue.
We need to go a little bit further and make sure the workers are getting paid and we're as ambitious as possible outside of New York City as well. I'm also looking to making sure that we have sustainable funding for the initiatives in New York City, like the 2Care program.
State Senator Zellner Myrie, who chairs the Senate Codes Committee, shares a similar sentiment. The senator highlighted the long history of support of the policy and the work ahead to get the proposal over the finish line.
But this is an issue that has been prominent in the legislature for many years, even before the last election, but was made clear that we expect the government to make life easier for us. And providing child care is a critical component of that. The devil's in the details. We got to make sure that we implement this right. We got to make sure that we have the funds to reach as many families as possible. And that's what we're going to be doing over the next couple of weeks and months.
This proposal, which the governor previewed days before her speech, also excited lawmakers and leaders beforehand. The State Department of Labor Commissioner Roberta Reardon, who also serves as co-chair of the State Child Care Task Force, before the governor's address, said universal child care is needed. The commissioner added that child care is essential to the state's economy.
If parents cannot find accessible, affordable child care, they can't work. It's that simple. So we're losing people every year who have to sit on the bench because they can't afford the child care.
State lawmakers like Assemblymember Mikhail Salages, a Democrat representing parts of Nassau County, says she feels the governor listened to families.
Families all across Long Island are going through affordability crisis. Me as a mom of three, I could tell you that life is very expensive. And so when we tackle and expand universal child care and pre-K for Long Island and other regions, it's really exciting because now we can help affordability with families.
Newly elected New York City Mayor Zoran Mamdani, who campaigned on and helped champion this policy, says this proposal will transform thousands of children and families' lives.
For so many New Yorkers, this is so much more than the fulfillment of a campaign promise or the realization of a policy priority. It is the assurance instead that New Yorkers need not any longer consider the choice between raising a family and the city that they love.
Another big policy from the governor's State of the State address was increased immigration protections for New Yorkers. This proposal received a standing ovation during Hochul's speech. The move by the governor comes after a U.S. citizen was killed by an ICE agent in Minnesota, an incident that has sparked grave outrage and criticism from lawmakers and advocates. The governor proposed making houses of worship, schools, and hospitals as sensitive areas in which federal immigration and customs agents would not be permitted to enter without a judicial warrant. In addition, under the governor's proposal, New Yorkers would be able to file lawsuits against ICE agents who violated their civil rights.
This does not interfere with local law enforcement or public safety. It simply affirms a core truth. Power does not justify abuse.
In response to the governor's immigration proposal, Mira Tawada, president and CEO of the New York Immigration Coalition, said it is important for the state to set up and protect the rights of immigrant New Yorkers.
So what we need to do here in New York is stop just, you know, using our rhetoric and use our action to deliver the protections that we know all New Yorkers deserve. What we saw last week with the shooting of Renee Good was horrifying. She was a U.S. citizen. And what we're seeing in that situation is the continuation of ICE continuing to be rogue and lawless. So we want to be able to ensure that we're protecting every single New Yorker, regardless of when they got here, how they got here, and that we continue to uphold our New York values.
Assemblymember Jessica Gonzalez-Rojas, a Democrat representing parts of Queens, shares a similar sentiment, saying she was surprised but pleased to see the governor take a stand against ICE.
ICE has been lawless. ICE has been terrorizing our neighborhoods. My district in particular, we've been dealing with ICE coming in to schools and churches and neighborhoods and like kidnapping people. So the fact that she stood very strong on that is really hopeful.
Gonzalez-Rojas says she hopes the governor's support highlighted in the address means she will support the New York for All Act this session, which will prohibit state and local resources from being diverted to federal officials. Assemblymember Gabriela Romero, Democrat representing parts of the Capital Region, also hopes for support of her bill from the governor, which was mentioned during the speech, the New York Civil Rights Act. The 5th and 14th Amendments of the U.S. Constitution specifically outline due process clauses, meaning all people, regardless of immigration status, are entitled to due process, fair legal treatment, notice, and a chance to be heard.
Our governor is standing up for civil rights in a way now more than ever it's so important. We're seeing across New York State these bad government actors violate our constitutional rights. We're seeing bad government overreach in a way that's violent and literally killing people.
Assemblymember Solages also stressed the importance of protecting families, New Yorkers, and upholding the state's sovereignty.
This law enforcement coming in and having just a blank check to rip our neighbors out, you know, it's just not acceptable.
Another proposal from the governor's State of the State address intends to address public safety by increasing protections around illegal and 3D printed ghost guns. The governor's proposal would specifically enact legislation to make it illegal to sell, distribute, or possess digital instructions to manufacture or produce a firearm or parts, and require gun manufacturers to design pistols that are not quickly and easily modified into DIY machine guns through the use of devices such as Glock switches. The legislation would also mandate the reporting of 3D printed guns, establish minimum safety standards for 3D printer manufacturers to ensure their products have technology to block the printer from creating firearms and parts.
So what the governor has done is tried to dismantle all the ways in which they fall into the wrong hands. And so from the Interstate Task Force to now looking at 3D homemade guns and Glock switches, the governor's proposals are how do we get in front of criminals who are trying to get guns into the hands of those who could do harm to others.
Brooklyn District Attorney Eric Gonzalez says if law enforcement doesn't stay on top of the ghost gun issue, they will lose the battle. He says they have been focused on the iron pipeline, but as technology advances, they have to keep up, stressing that 3D ghost guns are hard to track. Gonzalez believes the governor's proposal will help law enforcement do that.
We need to now focus in on the plastic pipeline and take these guns that are illegal and make sure that we have more tools. And what this allows us to do as prosecutors is to say these guns shouldn't get printed, and if you're in possession of files, then we can also do the prevention piece.
But not everyone was a fan of the governor's proposal. After the governor's proposal, the Senate Republican Conference released a rebuttal by Senator Steve Chan criticizing the governor on her proposals and what they call one-party rule in Albany.
It's that New York State does not have leadership. New York is not being led. New York is being controlled. One-party rule has turned Albany into an echo chamber for the most extreme voices from New York City. The governor is not steering the ship. She is being steered by extremist socialists who are promising everything to everyone for free.
Assembly Minority Leader William Barkley shared a similar sentiment. The leader said he was pleased that the governor was focusing on affordability, which has been a priority of the conference for several years, but was interested to know what the details of the proposals would ultimately look like.
It's nice she's just come to the party talking about affordability. It's something Republicans have been talking about for probably a decade now. It's simply too expensive to live here in New York State. Unfortunately, as a result, we've seen millions of people leave New York. I didn't see a lot of detail in her policy that makes me think she's straightening the ship out and, you know, people are going to be flocking to New York. In fact, I look forward to hearing more of what she's wants to do in that regard. She talked about high housing costs, talked about cutting red tape. Hallelujah. We're all for cutting red tape, but what usually that means is they take away local control and make all the red tape at the state level. So those are types of things that I get very concerned about. And the devil's always in the details on any of these policies.
The governor's address was also delivered against the backdrop of her upcoming campaign for re-election. In the coming months, in addition to handling the regular business of the legislative session, the governor will also be defending her seat from challengers on her left and right. Political strategist Austin Schaffer, managing partner of the political consulting firm Green Book Strategies, says the governor's speech brought her election focus to voters directly.
It's an election year budget. Kathy Hochul essentially laid out her plan to voters who are going to be making decisions both in the Democratic primary in June and in the general election in November. And she left them with one clear message. It's all about affordability. Everything that the budget was geared toward was to show that Kathy Hochul is on your side when it comes to making life less expensive, more affordable, bringing down the cost of living, and making things a little bit easier for hardworking New York families.
With the State of the State address in the rear view, the work for Governor Hochul continues. The proposals will take a more hammered out, detailed form in the governor's executive budget proposal, which is expected to be unveiled in the coming days. In Albany, I'm Elise Klein for the New York Public News Network.
Coming up next, the Real Food Songwriting Program. It blends art, nutrition, and local student voices. That's coming up next. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Tavern on Main, where modern American cuisine meets classic favorites. Dinner, weekend brunch, craft cocktails, and warm hospitality on Main Street in Jeffersonville. More at tavernonmainny.com.
This is Cooper R. Grace, KG, right here in the place to be, WJFF Radio Catskill Music Emporium, Tuesday night, 7 to 9. 2 hours of great music, jazz, funk, blues. I got mellow grooves to help you unwind, exciting rhythms to help you cut loose. Join me Tuesday night for the Music Emporium, 7 to 9, right here on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The STEAM Fund has just wrapped up its Real Food Songwriting Program, where middle schoolers work together to write original songs about nutrition, wellness, and making smart decisions around food. The project is now being shared with the wider community with a new student-created music video released every Monday. Joining us now to talk about the program, how it came together, and why music can be such a powerful teaching tool are Gary and Judy Siegel of the STEAM Fund, joining us via Zoom. Hello. Can you hear me, guys? Hold on.
Yes, we can. Good morning.
Ah, there we go. We did it. The magic of technology. Thanks for joining us. And let's remind folks about the Real Food Songwriting Program and how it fits into your STEAM Fund mission.
So our actual mission is to support musicians, artists, and the venues where they share their gift. And we have a number of vehicles that we are able to have that mission delivered. So the Real Food Songwriting Program is just one of those vehicles. And basically the program is, as you said, Tim, that it's a songwriting program where we incorporate music to present the concepts of real food versus processed food and talk about that and then help the students that are participating to make good, healthy choices. And we collaborated originally with the folks from A Single Bite and wrote a song called Real Food Rules. And that's how it all started.
So cute.
It's an amazing, I actually have if you want me to play the refrain that came out of that, it's really.
Sure, let's try it.
Let me just see if I can find it here. I think I have
live
it.
Radio. Yes,
I,
there you
live
go.
Radio. Here we are.
Tell me what does food mean to you? Where does it come from? What does it do? What are your favorites? Are they real? Tell me, how does food make you feel? When we pay attention, real food rules.
All right. Were they saying tummy?
Yummy.
Tell me. Sorry, I was all like, yes, I'm hungry.
That was the kids from RJK Middle School. And actually, the sixth graders. We actually did the program there. So basically, what they did with that program is that they wrote verses. After they have the presentation of the real food versus processed food. Well, we brainstorm with the kids. We have our teaching artists, Beth and Scott Bierko. They brainstorm with the kids to come up with ideas of verses for the Real Food Rules song. And they write verses to it. They teach them about songwriting and how they have to rhyme and the rhythms of songwriting, etc. And they come up with verses for the song. But the new program that we're doing now is sort of a hybrid of that, where Scott and Beth do the presentation, and then the kids write their own original song about a topic that has to do with real food versus processed food and making good, healthy choices.
We've talked to you before about your Full Steam Ahead podcast. We should note that the Full Steam Ahead podcast is a financial supporter of Radio Catskill. And we talk about the local music community and artists, established or, you know, up and coming artists, adults mainly. What inspired you to work in schools with kids about songwriting, specifically healthy choices and nutrition?
Well, the way this all started was that we were at a John Lennon tribute in New York City, and the executive artistic director of the organization got on stage and announced that they were bringing the John Lennon Real Love Project into public schools. And I was sitting there next to Judy, and I said, that's it. This was back in 2019, that we should bring arts and education programs into schools. And that's really how it started.
Gary's a music educator. So, you know, that speaks to all of his entire history in between music and education. That's what he does.
So in order to deliver our mission of supporting musicians, artists, and venues where they share their gift, this was a great vehicle. So it developed into, we started doing the John Lennon Real Love Project in the schools and helping with theater within that organization. But then we created the Real Food Songwriting Program based on the same format.
For a couple of reasons I just want to mention, that so food insecurity is obviously a big issue in Sullivan County, so that it was important to us to help facilitate a better way to make choices. And it is always part of our goal and our mission for music to provide tools to adults and students. And this is another way that music can provide those tools.
So you just completed the program, songwriting program at Liberty Middle School. We have a couple of the videos, songs that have been released so far. So I want to just play a little bit of the one that was released on January 12th called Don't Skip Meals. Can you tell us which group this is from? Which class?
I think I can. Don't Skip Meals is written by the superb Strawberries from Mrs. Applinalps and Mrs. Davis's class.
Let's take a listen.
It's time for a great song about real food and healthy habits. Here's Miss Applinalps and Miss Davis class, the superb Strawberries, to tell us more.
If you want to have some energy and be in the zone, don't skip your breakfast, lunch, or dinner at school or at home. Don't skip meals. Don't skip meals. Don't skip meals. You'll get cranked. Don't skip meals. You'll get tired. Don't skip meals. You'll get hangry. Don't skip meals. You'll zone out.
So remember, eating three balanced meals a day will give you the energy you need to be happy, healthy, and focused. Improve your mood, eat real food.
Real food rules!
That's a banger. Wow, those kids.
Isn't that amazing?
I can hear that in the clubs.
So the coolest thing about these songs is that every one of them has a message.
Yeah.
Every one of them is promoting good, healthy choices through music and creating these songs. And that's really what
you know, what we want to do is we want to get this out. We want to help improve the health of our county, and you know, it's the World Wide Web. So this is going on as a podcast that we're going to release these every Monday at midnight, and everybody will be able to listen to them.
And the other piece that it's really important for us to offer is that it teaches these kids at a young age that they can use music as that tool for all sorts of things. You know, who knows where these kids are going to grow up to learn that, hey, I we sent a message out because we wrote a song, and they too someday can write a song. So that would be fun for me.
Yeah,
have one of them become a musician.
Let's listen to the song that was released just yesterday, and you can tell that these are songs written by kids because the title of this one, "Dying is Unhealthy." Yes,
it's D-Y-I-N-G, dying.
This is from Mr. Golden's class. Let's take a listen to this one.
My own words.
It's time for a great song about real food and healthy habits. Here's Mr. Golden's class, the Dia Beats, to tell us more.
Dying is unhealthy for you.
With diets and chemicals are unhealthy and can even contribute to hyperactivity and cancer. They may look pretty, but it's like painting your food, dude. Real foods get their colors naturally. We all have a voice, we all have a choice. Choose real food.
Real food rules.
Gary and
Stop
Judy.
Stop painting your food, dude.
Yeah, wait, dude. Gary and Judy can see me because we're on Zoom here. I'm bopping my head. These kids are like, these got good beats. Yeah. Were there some surprising or memorable moments from these songwriting sessions that stood out to you guys?
Well, so just so you know, we couldn't hear the on our end, we couldn't hear the actual instruments. We could only hear the kids talking or singing on that. So if listeners heard the same
they can go to our
website to hear.
Yeah, they heard the beat and everything. I think it's because of the way we're connected here. But
you know, I was not actually present at most of these because we were away. You know, Beth and Scott are just fantastic working with the kids, and they're, it's magical what they do. They do this all within an hour of presenting, and then recording rehearsing and recording the kids. It's really a great process.
So, from what you've seen and heard so far, what impact do you think this program has had on students thinking about food and nutrition and healthy decision making?
You know, the best thing is that they're actually utilizing these assets. We provide a video as well as an audio asset for the schools that we go into, and they're actually using them on the morning announcements to promote the concepts of real food versus processed food and making good healthy choices. And I think they're also, I'm hoping that they're going to post it on their website for all of the stakeholders to be able to access. And you know, the impact that it can have is just to educate, and it's really part of the prevention and education of all this, you know, to make good healthy choices.
Certainly had an impact on us. So
yeah, real quick, where can folks get these videos every Monday and songs? Where can they hear them and see them?
So they can go to our website at steamfund.org, and we actually just posted these on our Buzzsprout podcasts. So wherever you find your podcasts, you should be able to find the full Steam Head Rules, Real Food Rules podcast.
All right. That's Gary and Judy Siegel of the Steam Fund. Thank you guys so much. And these are great things to hear from the students. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Tim.
Take care. We'll hear a little more on the way out. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Don't skip meals. You'll get tired. Don't skip meals. You'll get angry. Don't skip meals. You'll go now.
Support comes from Sullivan Allies Leading Together, committed to ensuring the safety of our community. Protect those most important by keeping medications in a secure space. Be a part of the solution. More at saltcares.com.
Hey, this is Matt Hurtado. Join me for Virtual Soundscapes, your gateway to the best music in gaming. Classic tracks from the 8-bit era, modern releases, and interviews with the minds behind the games. Wednesday night at 9 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Bitter cold today and through this evening as well. Well, high 16, low minus 4 tonight, tomorrow's high 23.